Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking about the importance of wetlands and the upcoming Wetlands Science Conference on the show today. With us, Katie Belfus, the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Katie, good to have you back. And also with us today, Dudley Edmondson, professional photographer, author, filmmaker, and public speaker. Much of his work centers on the environment and ethnic diversity in the outdoors. And Dudley, thank you for joining us as well. Really appreciate it.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having me.
As we listen to these two guests, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about wetlands? Why are they important to you? What about the conference coming up? Join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And again, we'd love to hear from you. Dudley, let's start with you. Again, welcome to the show. Maybe you could talk a bit about your work. You're carrying many hats here, the way it looks to me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of things and that sort of, I think I started out as a photographer, nature photographer, doing a lot of work photographing birds, particularly for field guides, encyclopedias, dictionaries, that kind of thing. And then transitioned into writing after being part of those books in photography form, decided I wanted to write my own book. And then transitioned then on to doing video production around conservation stuff. So it's kind of like almost like building a house and then doing little add-ons to it, so to speak. So that's kind of how my career sort of went there, just additions to my house.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got lots of questions for you, but I want to turn to Katie for a minute. When we talked to you last year about this time, you had just decided to make the conference for 2020 a virtual conference. How did that work out overall?
The 2020 conference, we barely pulled off in person. We were right ahead of the curve and had a great conference, but then did, of course, decide a little bit later in the spring that it was inevitable to go virtual for 2021. So that's what we're gearing up for now. And we have about 3 weeks left and have a really great program pulled together, and I like to think that I'm building neurons and neural connections in my brain because I'm learning a whole lot of new stuff this year.
Yeah, aren't we all? And the conferences, what are the dates again?
The conference this year is February 16, 17, 18, and 19. We spread it out over 4 days so we can allow for the fact that folks have interesting work and home lives these days. And so rather than smash everything into two really long days, we're spreading it out over longer days so that folks can come and go as their schedule allows.
Yeah. Dudley, I imagine your speaking engagements, things of that nature were a little different this past year as well. But I'm wondering, are there some advantages of speaking this way virtually and so forth?
Yeah, you know, I mean, in the beginning, I kind of freaked out because I had a presentation I was giving, I think, in Maryland in March of 2020, and that got, or Virginia, and that got canceled. And I was thinking, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. But all of a sudden, as humans do, we all adapt, and things got better. People started using Zoom, and before I knew it, I was just had stacks of Zoom presentations. And one of the things I like the most is that in a situation like this, anyone can attend your conference regardless of where they are in the world. And, you know, I think I know I've done at least one this year where someone from overseas was on the call. So it's, you know, it's just nice to be able to actually reach a broader audience.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I was thinking back last week, we had a conference, a conversation on campus, a global conversation, and normally you'd have just people from the UW campus, but I know at least one visitor attendee was from Mexico, so it was great. That is a great advantage. There are some disadvantages for sure.
Yeah.
Nice to be there in person, but all in all, as you say, we're doing a pretty good job of kind of getting through it all, I think. Katie, what's the main focus of the conference this year? Talk about that.
Well, our theme this year is it's all about the water. As a wetland science conference, of course, we talk about wetlands, but this year we're really focusing on the connections across the water cycle and across our landscapes. So the interrelationship between uplands and wetlands and rivers and streams and lakes and groundwater, because it's all connected. And if we are to have success at addressing some of our challenges, whether it be flood damages or water quality problems, we really have to look at the full picture. We have to take a watershed approach and not look at individual sites or individual bodies of water, but to look at the whole system. And so we are having, in addition to our regular conference content and Dudley's great presentation, we're also having a special symposium on hydrologic restoration. And that's a fancy term that means fixing the water. So let's look at the way water is moving across our landscape and what repairs we can do to that system in order to head off flood damages or improve water quality. Because if we look just at the body of water that we're trying to fix or just at the culvert that we're trying to protect, it's too late. We have to look upstream and make the connections on the landscape to help improve the health of our waters and communities. So that's what we'll be looking at across the conference and in particular at the special symposium.
Yeah. Dudley, what are you going to be talking about?
Well, mostly about what I call the disconnect between African Americans and the outdoors, and helping people understand that it's many generations old, and it goes all the way back to slavery and you know, Jim Crow laws and things in the South. I mean, there's a lot of components to it, but basically trying to help people understand that and figuring out ways how we can move forward in engaging a more diverse environmental audience.
Why are people of color underrepresented, do you think, in the field of conservation and outdoor activities in general? It just seems that way to me, at least. I think that's right.
Yeah, that is correct. And I think it comes from the fact that, again, you know, going back many generations, I think white Americans have a sense of ownership and appreciation for nature and the environment that African-American families just were unable to acquire because we've spent so much time just fighting for civil rights and being treated like human beings, and it was not a priority. And so you have multiple generations who've invested more of their energy in civil rights and not so much about the environmental concerns. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's more to it than that.
Yeah, for sure. Two guests for you today as you listen in. Katie Belfus from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, Dudley Edmondson, a professional photographer, a filmmaker, and speaker. It's great to have both of them with us. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org with your questions. Could be about wetlands, could be about the conference, could be about some of the things that we're talking about with Dudley as well, which obviously relate. So, let's take a call. Ron in Twin Lakes, we'll give you a chance to join in. Ron, hi.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to thank you, Larry, and Katie and Dudley for hosting this conversation today. Our wetlands in our state and pretty much all of our waters in our state are extremely important to us, not only for drinking, usage, boating, recreation. Tourism industry is huge in the values of our clean waters. My question today would be for Katie. I know back in October you attended a meeting that I attended, a Zoom meeting with Larry Lynch and other people from the DNR, regarding the recent mining rule changes. And I understand that today those mining changes were enacted and the DNR pulled out the wetland protection laws regarding the mining issues in the state. So I'm kind of concerned about, you know, how does your group feel about the DNR's decision to pull out the not only the wetland protection, but also all the special resource areas, areas of special concern, you know, different parks. They pretty much have said now that the entire state will be open for mining. So I'm interested in your response to that, Katie.
Well, these are the moments where I wish I could bring in my colleagues in our policy programs at our organization, because they would be the ones to be able to answer this question better than I. But I will give it my best shot. Certainly, our organization is always concerned when protections for wetlands are weakened, and we are always on the watch for that and always advocating on behalf of wetlands. Unfortunately, I cannot speak to this specific case because it's not my area of expertise within the organization, but I'd invite you to reach out to our organization and our policy staff to get a more detailed update on this particular situation. And I apologize, I can't give a more complete answer than that.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Carrie in Sparta, we'll go to you. Hi, Carrie.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. I have an interesting background in water and water purification, and I came across a product called Grander Water, and you flow the water through it, and it actually gives it life. It realigns the molecules so they're all in the same way. Not like a magnet one, but it's more of an energetic flow. And this for Kate, if you would get someone at the conference that could do this, this thing can be used where they put it on pools in big hotels, and they use one third of the amount of chemicals that they would use normally. They use it in, it doesn't necessarily soften the water, but it makes the water, wouldn't say wetter like the surface tension, but it makes it alive. So make from the salt water, you can precipitate the mineral out. There's 93 minerals in salt water. Well, you take the salt water out of it, you just take the salt out of it, and then you have a product called Ormus. And Ormus is a revitalizer, too, and you can do a whole lot of stuff. And it'd be good at the conference, too, to study this stuff.
Well, thanks for calling. Katie, one more comment back from you.
Yeah, but it's not a product I've heard of before. Sounds really intriguing, and we'll keep an eye out in the future for adding that to our agenda. We're chock-a-full this year, but we'll look for some other opportunity.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, two guests for you today, Katie Belfus from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, Dudley Edmondson, professional photographer, author, and filmmaker, and he will be speaking at the 2021 Wetland Science Conference, and you'll be able to attend that as well, if I'm not mistaken. We'll learn some more about that as we move along with our two guests today. You can join in 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Dinner, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the 2021 Wetland Science Conference with our two guests, Katie Belfus and Dudley Edmondson. Great to have them with us today, and certainly thank you for joining in, too. Questions about the conference, maybe questions about our conversation we're having with Dudley as well, maybe a wetland question. Join in at 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Katie, I said the anybody can sign up for the conference. I don't know if I said, you're nodding yes, that's the case. Tell us more about that and how do we do that.
The conference is always open to anybody who would like to attend. Primarily, it's wetland professionals and folks engaged in wetland and related conservation activities, but we have a lot of retired folks and landowners and students who also come. This year, as you said, it's easier than ever because the conference is virtual, so you can log in your pajamas from the comfort of your own home at your convenience. But it is open to the public. Our early bird registration rates are good through the end of January. So if you're interested, sign up today. And we do have discounts for people who are Wetlands Association members and big discounts for students because we really want to engage them in this conference. And I'll say this year, because it's virtual, we have the special added bonus that you will be able to watch the conference not only live during its 4 days, but we'll also have all of the recordings of the presentations available for a full 6 months after the fact. So if you miss a couple of things because your schedule is busy, you can circle back and watch them later or watch something again if you want to pick up some more information from a second viewing.
Very good. Dudley, I want to get back to you for just a minute. When Katie mentioned participation and so forth, we were talking a bit about people of color being underrepresented in this. What are you doing what is being done to get more participation?
Well, there's just general awareness. I've been actually just very, very recently starting to work with YMCA summer camps here in Minnesota that are trying to get families of color into the outdoors. They're offering cabins and environmental educational programming for people. So, there's a lot of things that need to be done and that people are doing. Personally, I've been, just doing my own sort of impromptu environmental education with friends, taking people out bird watching and, participating in, fly fishing and kayaking, canoeing, camping. Last year, I took a young man and his son camping for the very first time, a young man of African-American man and his very young son camping, their first camping experience. He wanted to make sure that someone who looked like his son showed him, helped him have that experience. And so those are the kinds of things I've been doing and continue to do when opportunities present themselves.
Yeah. And through your work, through your photography, I got to believe that is a way that you help that cause along as well.
Yeah. My book, Black and Brown Faces in America's Wild Places, from 2006, was my attempt to create a set of outdoor role models for the African-American community. And so I intentionally photographed people, African-Americans in particular, who had careers in conservation. At that time, the Department of Interior Secretary was African-American under the Bush administration. And, so it was important for people to see people who look like them, doing things around conservation.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Let you join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. For Dudley or Katie or both, let's take another call. 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Terry in Fitchburg will give you a chance. Hi, Terry.
Hi, good morning. Say, I was wondering what we can do about some cattails that keep spreading on our property. We have a wetlands, and it seems like every year they just keep spreading more and more. What can we do about that?
Yeah, it's this very interesting thing, right? Cattails are like the poster child of wetlands, right? They're what everybody brings to mind when they think about wetlands. They think about cattails. And the sad reality in Wisconsin is that I would hazard to say the vast majority of our cattails in Wisconsin now are either an invasive species or the hybrid between that invasive species and our native species of cattail. But because there's been so much hybridization, so much cross between the native and the invasive, it's very hard to tell what's the native one from what's the not native one. And the not native one and the hybrid are very, very competitive and will crowd out just about anything else. And so I can't tell you how to recognize when it's the invasive other than to say if it's behaving that way, if it's crowding out all of its neighbors and taking everything over, chances are you have that invasive kind of cattail or the hybrid. And it also it can be kind of tricky to control the cattails. And interestingly, one way that you can kill them is to drown them, which seems sort of antithetical for something that's a wetland plant, but if you have a way of lowering the water in your wetland, sometimes people will have a water control structure that allows them to manage the level of the water in their wetland. Not everybody has that, so it's not always easy. But if you can lower the water table or the water levels in your wetland and get out in the wintertime and cut those cattails as low as you can, and then flood that area in the springtime, you can actually drown the plants because you have cut off and the water can get into the roots. Whereas when it's a standing up plant, it's got protection, right? So the water stays out of the inside of the tissue of the plant. So we have some information on our website for landowners about managing cattails that you can go check out. And if you want to follow up with an email to my organization, I'd be happy to share that with you directly if you can't find it right away by yourself. But it's a tricky one. I won't sell you any bill of goods that it's going to be easy, but it is unfortunate that we have that problem. Lots of invasive plants.
Terry, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Richard in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Sure. I'm from northern Wisconsin originally, Eagle River, Rhinelander area. And then I was Catholic school principal on the south side of Milwaukee, basically for my career. And I realized these kids, it's predominantly Hispanic, but they really know nothing about the outdoors, the environment. So every year I took them to, our group took them to Trees for Tomorrow Environmental Camp in Eagle River.
Mm-hmm.
For 3 nights and 4 days, and then the group goes through, they'll have buses going out, like a bus going to Nicolet National Forest to learn about reforestation, another one going to a lake project with the DNR. So I thought that's a great way to teach the youth about the outdoors, especially from the city, Central City youth.
Well, I thank you very much for calling. Matt Dudley, turn to you first. A comment?
Yeah, you know, youth programs are very popular, and I think they're definitely very beneficial for young kids. But the only issue that happens sometimes is that if that kid's parents don't have any connection to nature and the outdoors, that kid's never getting back out there again. So that's why I'm a big proponent of family environmental education programming. You want to teach the parents so that they can, in turn, after your program goes away, after that kid gets back home from that youth camp, the parents now have some skills and they can go and take that kid in the outdoors and, you know, go fishing and camping and things like that. So to me, in order to get the generational, you know, appreciation for outdoors, you need to do family programming in addition to youth programming.
Yeah, that makes sense. Katie, a comment?
Well, I would just say as an organization, we're thinking about how we can help with this situation through our outreach and programming and through this conference. How can we inspire the next generation of wetland scientists to represent our society at large in terms of the demographics. And so that's something we are always looking at, and we're doing more so at this conference, given the year that we have been through as a nation this year finally some recognition that this is really something we all need to be talking about and addressing in our own work, no matter what. So
thank you again, Richard, for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join in 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. Somebody else was wondering about the importance of watersheds, the way you were defining them, why they're so important.
Well, that's a great question. And we have a short video that I would encourage your listeners to go find on our website. It's called How Wetlands Manage Water. And it walks through that in about 4 minutes. It's a little whiteboard explainer video, and it explains the kinds of wetlands that typically are found in the upper parts of the watershed and what they do, absorbing water, small wetlands, but lots of them in the upper parts of the watershed, middle watershed wetlands that many of them are along creeks and rivers, and they're there to take the overflow of water when there's a storm event or a snowmelt event, and they take the water and then they let it back down when that's the right time. And the lower watershed wetlands, which have lots of filtration systems for cleaning out any of the sediments that might come down the streams and the rivers before they get into the larger bodies of water, the larger lakes and the larger rivers. So check out that video, because if you don't have those upper watershed wetlands absorbing the snowmelt and the rain, that water is whooshing into the streams at a much faster pace. There's a lot more velocity, a lot more energy in that water, and that causes the scouring and the erosion and the downcutting of our streams. And all that water moves fast and off of the landscape. And then later in the season, when you want that water in the ground to be able to nourish your trees or your plants or your crops, it's not there because it's already run downhill. So that's just one example of having wetlands at these different parts of the watershed helps the whole watershed be healthier.
Yeah, you were kind of nodding in agreement there, Dudley.
Yeah, I mean, I've in some of the video production work I've been doing, I've been doing a lot of work with the Nature Conservancy over the last 4 years, and doing, where I'm talking to water quality scientists about projects they're working on, and learning a lot about how important watersheds are. I mean, and understanding that, you know, if you have that high volume of water and it's causing erosion, that erosion in turn allows, you know, plant matter to fall into rivers and streams and things like that. And you need those plants to actually help filter that water. I mean, plants or trees, they sequester carbon, they clean water, and they produce oxygen. And so, you know, it's important for those plants to have soil to be in. And if the banks of rivers and streams erode, a lot of times those plants, you know, can fall in and things. And here in northern Minnesota, I live on the shore of Lake Superior. And over the last decade or so, you see all of the dead and dying birch trees that, because the coniferous forest was logged off, you know, back in the last centuries or so. So you have all this dead and dying birch. And that then allows, because there's no plant matter holding in, no root structure holding the banks of the Lake Superior in, you're seeing all of this dirt and mud and things calving off in these storms, these 100-year storms we're getting here in northern Minnesota. And so, you know, it's really bad to watch that happen. But yeah, I mean, water, good quality water is important to everything and everyone. I mean, it's, to me, it's about the most important thing I can think of, other than healthy soils and pollinators.
Yeah. And you mentioned, these 100-year events that seem to be happening practically every yeah. year. And it's, I'm wondering, how is climate change, I mean, I think it's an indication of climate change. How's that affecting your work? Maybe Katie, turn to you first.
Sure. Well, it's actually a big part of our work right now, because we see that, sometimes people have an alarming tendency to think that we know better than the land how to take care of things. And certainly we have a lot of wonderful engineering that has enabled the life that we have right now, right? There's a lot of wonderful technological engineering. On the other hand, nature knows how to manage water, and nature would adapt to managing more water that might come our way because of storm events. We don't know yet if it's going to be more water or less water. We do see that when the storms come, they're bigger and stronger and dump a lot more in a slow period of time. In a short period of time, we want to work with nature and work with the landscape to figure out the natural solutions to managing this new reality of the precipitation that comes our way, because I think it's gonna be cheaper to utilize what nature already knows how to do. And I think it's gonna be a lot more resilient in the long term. And, you know, Dudley mentioned Lake Superior region and the storm events that have been happening up there in recent years. We were working on a project in that area, where the local town spends 75% of its annual budget on road repair from storm damage. I mean, that's just not sustainable. And so we're working in collaboration with a lot of partners in that area to figure out natural flood management solutions on the landscape that make sense, not just ecologically, but they make sense financially to emergency managers and to town boards and commissions who see that they are going to have to spend a lot of money managing the new reality, and that if they can get ahead of the curve and use nature to help us manage the new reality, it's going to be not only better for the land, it's going to be better for the pocketbook and for the community.
And when you talk about nature managing it, I mean, do you have advice on how to let nature manage and what people can do? And
yeah, well, this larger project also incorporates some demonstration projects that the Wisconsin legislature actually provided some seed money for, and there's more money coming in to support those projects so that we can show people what that looks like. How did we assess the watershed to know where wetland restoration or stream work was needed and would be most beneficial? What practices did we consider for solving the challenges, and what practices were effective? And we're looking at really low budget, low cost, simple kinds of techniques wherever we can, because the price tag can't prevent this work from happening. It's too important. And there's lots of great examples. And many of our speakers, as part of our symposium, are coming from across the country where they are already doing this work in Colorado, in Utah, in Washington, in other areas where this work is already underway. And we really want to bring that expertise to Wisconsin and get some more of this work happening here.
And again, mentioning the conference itself, maybe we just go back to that for a couple of minutes and talk more about those speakers. And certainly Dudley's you're giving the plenary address. But what can you tell us about some of the speakers?
Sure. In addition to Dudley headlining our event, we've got six speakers from around the nation who will be bringing their expertise, whether they are hydrology scientists or land managers or researchers or even private consultants and folks that have worked to set up state programs to do this kind of work of natural flood management and landscape scale watershed restoration. So, for example, Colin Thorne is a renowned, globally renowned hydrologist who's going to be talking about how rivers and wetlands work and work together. Because sometimes we manage rivers and we manage wetlands, but we don't necessarily think of those things together. But they very often are, and both work better if they have the other. Another example, Mike Klein is coming to us from Vermont, where he is retired now, but was instrumental in setting up a program there where the state started incorporating this kind of hydrologic watershed approach in all of its state agency programs, whether it was flood management or road construction or a number of other, agency divisions. They were working together in concert with one another in order to build better infrastructure that would help undo the challenges and prevent future flooding events, as in one example. So those are two of the other speakers that are coming. We've got another, Katie Yod is coming from Colorado. She's a private consultant who is building the public-private partnership that's helping this work happen in Colorado. So they're bringing their tangible on-the-ground expertise from other parts of the country and sharing that with us through the conference.
Excellent. Terry in Oshkosh has a question, and let's go there. Terry, hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I do have a question, and it's about wetlands.
Okay.
We're wondering how we can find out if we are indeed on the edge of a wetland, because we purchased 17 acres about 2.5 years ago, and the property behind our home, we've got maybe a half an acre that's grass that should be able to be mown, and then we've got an acre behind that that's a field that used to be worked like a cornfield, and then 15 acres of woods behind that. Since we've been here for the 2.5 years, we can maybe barely mow the grass in our yard because it's so wet, it's like spongy, And we wanted to develop that acre of the farmland into a prairie, but we've been told that we were probably on the edge of a wetland, but nobody can tell me who to go to see and how much it might cost to find out. Can you point me in a direction?
Yeah, you've come to the right place. I'm so happy to hear from you and to hear about your interest. And we have a lot of materials on our website, wisconsinwetlands.org, specifically for landowners to help you know where you can get answers to your questions, know where you can get information and technical support, knowing whether you have a wetland or not. You know, the beautiful thing about nature is it happens on a continuum, right? We call something a prairie or something a wetland or something a woodland, but nature mixes all those things together. It's all a continuum, right? So you might have a wet prairie or a sedge meadow, and it might look sort of grassy, but it might be a wetland and it might be a wet prairie. You know, it's all beautifully interconnected there, right? And so you might have some of each. So saying that you are interested in developing a prairie, but you're not sure if you can, well, sure you can. You might be developing a wet prairie. You might be restoring a wet prairie. So on our website, you can find information for landowners. We have a lovely little handbook for landowners called My Healthy Wetlands that will help walk you through some of the steps that you can take to assess your property and people that you can call for the support. And so you can order that publication right from our website, wisconsinwetlands.org. And we'd be happy to talk with you about that as well if you want to give us a call sometime at the office.
There you go, Terry. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Wow, we've gone through a lot here. I just... wondering again, maybe we should mention how people can get signed up. Again, the specifics of the dates and times and so forth and how people can get signed up.
Yep. Terrific. The conference is February 16 through 19. And all of the information you can find at the website conference.wisconsinwetlands.org. We have a full schedule of the program, and there's a link from there to register for the conference. And the early bird registration rates are good through Sunday. So if you're interested, sign up now and save. And we really look forward to having your engagement. And I'll just say, you know, the symposium, I described some of those speakers, and it might have sounded kind of technical, but we have talked with them all very specifically that we're reaching a wide audience of people and that we want to start with the basics, right? We want to talk about these issues in a way that anybody could understand. So don't feel overwhelmed if those speakers sounded technical. I think there'll be a lot in what they have to say that will be easy for all of us, including me, to understand.
Okay. Well, including me as well. And again, we have a link on the Larry Mueller Show website in our program notes, too, if you want to go there, if you didn't get all that information. In the meantime, Dudley, Katie, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it, and looking forward to your meeting. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. It's been great. Yeah.
Katie Belfus, Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Dudley Edmondson, professional photographer, author, and he is the featured speaker at the 2021 Wetlands Science Conference. So looking forward to that. And I want to thank them again for being with us today. And we're going to turn our attention to snowmobiles coming up next. You may be a snowmobiler, or you may be somebody would like to be. There are some accidents happening across the state. We want to talk about that and just about snowmobiling in general with our next guest. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.